Hello, what's up? This is the Mark, Mike, and Joe Sports Show, sports podcast, call it what you want. Thanks for joining us here on this Friday, January 23rd in 2015. Mark and Sarah here, Joe Basile there.
Hello.
Mike Echoes behind the glass. Mike will join us in a few seconds as we dive into another week of sports talk. We'll be talking about the NBA and the state of the New York Knicks, which we wanted to get to more last week, but we didn't, so we'll cover it this week. And also the NHL, because we haven't talked enough about the New Jersey Devils and this insane three-headed coaching monster that they've assembled. And I want takes from two gentlemen who I consider to be very well-informed on that subject. But first, guys, the NFC and AFC title games went down just last weekend. And this week, as in previous weeks, unfortunately, we're left talking about something other than the game. The last 2 weeks, last couple of rounds, it was something that has to do with officiating. This week, it's something that has to do with deflated footballs. And Joe, this has been all anyone's talking about the last few weeks, so why shouldn't we talk about it? And what is your think? What do you feel about this Deflategate thing? Because personally, I look at it as I don't really care that much.
No, I don't see how anyone can look at this, and especially look at that game from Sunday, and think that these footballs had a damn thing to do with the outcome in that one.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots deflating the footballs that they used had nothing to do with Andrew Luck going 12 of 33 for 126 yards, no touchdowns, and throwing two picks. It had nothing to do with the Colts only getting 83 yards of rushing themselves, and it had nothing to do with the Colts not being able to stop LeGarrette Blount. He went off for nearly 150 yards, three touchdowns. So, yeah, maybe it made Tom Brady get a better grip on the football. Maybe it made it easier for the Patriots receivers to catch the ball. But on the other side, it's not like this was some close game where you can point to this and say, maybe this had an impact in X, Y, and Z. And also, it's not like you can look at this and say that, well, they just dominated him through the air. Because they didn't. They dominated him on the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Mike.
I have to tell you, I find this much ado about nothing. Because I agree with a lot of what Joe said is, I don't know how much deflating the ball is going to have that much of effect. I held in my hands earlier today an official NFL football, and it's slightly deflated.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how much more of an advantage you have with that slightly deflated ball. And, of course, yeah, number one, Colts were not tackling. Number two, Luck wasn't doing anything with his fully inflated balls.
Mm-hmm.
But, guys, I want to ask you, and, Mark, we're going to come to you.
Yeah.
Why are there some out there, and it's more than some, I think, guys, because you've noticed it, sports talkers, sports writers, sports journalists, who really want the Patriots punished on this? Why?
Well, I think part of it, whether it's a small part or a big part of it, I don't know, but I think a part of it certainly is the fact that the media hasn't had all that great of a relationship with the New England Patriots, specifically with Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 10-plus years.
Yep,
I mean,
sure.
He's never been their best friend.
Yeah, he's not Mr. Warm and Fuzzy.
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it, but I also think a large part of it has to do with the fact that the Patriots have been caught cheating in the past with the whole Spygate thing.
Yeah, but that
and
was
I think,
6 years ago.
Yes, I know that.
Or actually longer than that.
I know that, but it's
yeah,
still...
Yeah, it was before the
2007.
Yeah.
It was the first game of the 07 season.
Yep, right.
Well, I think that... But it's the same culture, same organization, same main antagonist in Belichick. In his organization, I think that has something to do with it. And plus the fact that I think that when you look at the fact that 11 of the 12 balls were deflated to the point where it was against the rules, I think that that seems to indicate that there was some foul play. And people look at that regardless of the score of the game. And I agree with you completely that there's no way the Colts win this game regardless of what happened. Because you're right. The Colts didn't do anything on offense. And there was nothing wrong with the footballs that Andrew Luck was throwing.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that they weren't getting the receivers he was throwing them to. So I think that both of those are big factors in why this is such a big scandal.
And I think building off a little bit of Mark's point is that I think a lot of the calls for severe punishment for the New England Patriots come from people's jealousy almost of the Patriots. Look, full disclosure, I'm a Giants fan, and I love nothing more than to see them beat the Patriots in the two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be categorized as a Patriot fan or a Patriot defender, but I think a lot of some of the hate that they get almost stems from a jealousy from people who look at Tom Brady, who look at Bill Belichick, and see all the success that they've had together and don't like that for whatever reason it is that they don't want to see them successful. So they'll almost attach themselves to anything they possibly can to bring them down, to try and punish them in a way for some of the success that they've had in the past. And sports is not the only place in our society where we see this happen.
By the way, we're about 4.5 minutes into today's podcast, and I just want to tell those who are listening to the audio version, you have missed, in case you missed this, you want to go see this on YouTube, we, the three of us, have already made weird faces, either coughing or going away from the microphone so we could clear our throats and not do it into the microphone. Those watching on YouTube, hopefully did we not look ugly when we did that?
Hopefully we can get this on YouTube by the end of the weekend.
You know what, I won't speak for you guys, but I didn't.
Made a weird-looking move.
Yeah, but
I
went to you, though. I turned away from the camera.
We'll see.
Joe, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I wanted to say to Joe, now this reminds me of what we were talking about with the Hall of Fame voting, especially with the baseball or the football, is that you have these sports writers who are carrying a grudge for whatever reason. Maybe 30 years ago, I went into a locker room, tried to get an interview with you, and I didn't know that you had to rush to see your mom in the hospital, but you blew me off, and I'm just going to hold a grudge. Yep. And I think that's what's happening. There are people looking for New England to lose number one draft choices over the next 3 years. They want Tom Brady. I saw this today. One sports writer wants Brady to sit out this game.
Well, a lot of people are calling for Belichick to be suspended for the Super Bowl.
That's nuts.
A lot of people are saying that, including one very famous sports talk host here in the Tri-State area, saying that the NFL cannot wait until after the Super Bowl to discipline these people, and that they have to come down now, and that this is not something the NFL can just sweep under the rug. They've tried to do so many things this year, and people are comparing this to the Sean Payton, the Bounty Gate thing, when Sean Payton got suspended
totally
by
different.
A year.
Totally different than that. And just to wrap up and put a little bow on this thing, just a couple of tweets that I saw this week. One, the first one from a prominent Boston area radio personality who said, the NFL can find out in 2 days that 11 balls were deflated exactly 2 PSI, but still don't know if they received a videotape from Atlantic City. That was one. And the other one was from Kate Fagan, who is a contributor to ESPN, CNN, and a whole bunch of other things, is, I hope somebody got this deflation on video evidence, because we all know it didn't happen if there's no video proof.
Yeah. Well,
two things that I liked a lot
before we move on to the other title game, I find it incredible that all three of us actually started the show by agreeing on one thing.
It really is amazing.
So it is a very rare...
We agree.
Yeah, it's a very rare occurrence. So get ready for some screaming and yelling the rest of the show, because we can't keep this up for long. Guys, the other NFC title game, one of the craziest finishes I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. I think you have to call it a little bit of a choke by the Green Bay Packers, and Seattle Seahawks find themselves back in the Super Bowl in a lot of ways not because of the way they played, but because of the way the other team played. Now, what were your thoughts on the last 5 minutes of that Seahawks-Packers game, Mike?
Well, you know, it's like I said to you guys when I had texted you after the game. Us old guys will say, just when we thought we'd seen everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just when I thought I'd seen everything. And I go all the way back. I'll never forget how shocked I was during the 75 divisional playoffs when Roger Staubach threw that first ever Hail Mary pass. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You know, and it's just shocking that the Vikings were in control of that game until that. Here, the Packers were in control of this game, and then all of a sudden it fell apart. Now, I want to ask you guys.
Yeah.
A lot of people are putting a pressure on this poor kid, Bostic.
Brandon Bostic, the tight end.
Who dropped
the onside kick.
Uh-huh. The onside kick. But I put a lot of blame on the Packers losing on the kid who intercepted the pass.
I knew this was going to come up.
Instead of actually trying to gain some yards, which he could have done, he just simply fell on the ball, killed the clock right there.
See, I've looked at the replay of this a number of times from a number of different angles. Uh-huh. And if you watch, because there was one view that was from behind the Seahawks offense, behind Russell Wilson, where he throws the interception. And you can see the Seahawks offensive line kind of spread out when he, like, I don't think, he could have gotten 10 yards at least easily. We can all agree on that.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't think he was going to do something that really was going to have a huge effect on the game. And two other things that I want to bring up in reference to this. One is, if you watch the replay, you can see Julius Peppers telling him to go down after he picks it off. Peppers just immediately puts his hand out and starts walking over the field and says, just go down.
Right.
So this wasn't like he just had this random brain cramp and decided to sit down. And second of all...
So we blame Julius Peppers then?
No, I think that it was a team mindset. I think it was a team mindset of, okay, this is the game. And second of all, as a Cowboys fan, I remember a young man named DeMarcus Lawrence in their playoff victory against the Lions who picks up what should have been a game-ending fumble, tries to run with it, and fumbles it back to the other team.
That's true.
And there's a game that no one's talking about. It was back in 2009, I think it was, with the Chargers and the Patriots playing in a divisional playoff game in San Diego. A guy named Marlon McCree picks off a pass with like 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, the Chargers holding a 3-point lead, and tries to run it back, fumbles, Patriots get it back and kick a game-tying field goal, go on to win that game. So there's precedent to guys making mistakes in situations like that that, in hindsight, I looked at it as, what are you doing? So I don't put a lot of blame on Morgan Burnett for that.
Yeah, but Joe? Not Bostic either.
Well, I agree.
I
don't think you can't really blame that so much on Bostic. Teams botch onside kicks all the time.
Right.
Other, you know, teams recover onside kicks all the time. The big thing in terms of that one, and both you guys kind of talked about a little bit some of Green Bay's clock management, which was definitely not terrific in that fourth quarter.
See, I disagree with that, but we'll get to that.
But also, you look at that 2-point conversion.
Seattle got
to go up by three.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson, granted, he did what he always does. He rolled out. He made a play with his legs, kept it alive. But then he threw an absolute duck across the field. That thing hung up there for 10. It felt like 10 minutes. It was probably more like 3 seconds. But that thing held up there for a long time. There is no way that should have been a completion. And if it was going to be a completion, he didn't catch it in the end zone. He caught it at the 1 yard line and still had to get in. So if you can see as the defender that you're not going to be able to at least bat it down or pick it off, get behind the guy, let him catch it and bring him down. Yeah. Have some awareness of the situation in the game.
Packers
because
did
then,
not defend that at
if
all.
If they don't convert on that, then they go down, they kick the field goal, and the Packers are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think when the Seahawks scored that touchdown, even before the 2-point conversion, I don't think there's anyone who wasn't thinking, well, there isn't enough time for Aaron Rodgers to do anything.
Yeah.
We all thought Aaron Rodgers had plenty of time to go down and get a field goal win it or tie it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Clinton Dix misplayed that 2-point conversion so horribly.
Yep. Yeah.
Like it was I didn't think it was possible to make a play that badly.
And he had been having a good game too. He already had two interceptions.
He almost had three.
Right. Yeah. And the same thing on one of the last touchdown run by Beast Mode.
Yeah.
Clay Matthews got completely taken out of that play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just totally blown away the way he was blocked in a huge hole that Beast Mode just went right through and Lynch went right to the end zone.
Yeah.
It should have never happened. It was about 35 yards, 40 yards? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It should have never happened.
Well, the Seahawks in the drive before that went, how long? I mean, I can't remember how long that drive was. The drive before that, after the interception, when they punted it
was quick.
When they went like 80 yards, something like that. And this is a Packers defense that had let them do nothing all day, and they let them score touchdowns on their last three possessions.
Well,
if you go to the Super Bowl, you can't do that. You got to stop them, and they couldn't do that.
And also, if you're going to the Super Bowl, when you have all this momentum early on in the game and you're intercepting Russell Wilson, you have got to put the dagger in the Seahawks. You can't keep settling for field goals and playing it too conservatively and setting yourself up for field goals early in the game. And, you know, give credit to the Seattle defense for being able to hold Green Bay to field goals early in that
game.
But still, if you're going to win that game, you've got to get into the end zone more than once in that first half.
It was a 69-yard drive, that first drive, for the touchdown after the punt, the interception.
Okay.
And to your point quickly about the Green Bay's clock management, now, if you look at the two drives, the two possessions they had before Seattle scored the touchdowns, they had a drive. They started at their own 13. They had two runs, and then this was a point of contention between me and my dad who was watching the game. They threw the ball on third down. And it was an incompletion, stop the clock. Then they get the interception. They run the ball three times and stop the clock. And then the Seahawks call two timeouts, and they run the clock after the third down play. I didn't think the Packers played it that badly. I think that when you look at if anything, I thought they should have played it more aggressively. Because the first throw on the third and four from their own 19, I thought was a good call. Because if you look at these two possessions, all Green Bay needed was one first down, and they win.
Well,
the game would have been over.
I'll give you an example here, and because of what ended up happening, it wasn't, you know, a big deal because Seattle went on to go into overtime and win anyway. Green Bay, with 16 seconds left, called a timeout in the fourth quarter before they kicked the field goal. Why not
Run it all the way
down.
Run
that clock down and then use that timeout, because then you gave, if Seattle wanted to, you gave them the opportunity to return the ensuing kickoff and then to have the ability to run a Hail Mary, which granted they didn't end up doing, but if they wanted to, they had the amount of time that they could have and could have come back to win that game, and that would have been absolutely disastrous. I don't know what the thought process towards doing it at 16 seconds as opposed to running it down to 4 or 5 seconds.
I think the reason was if they had a bad snap, they could have then just could have just gone down and taken the timeout. I think that I'm not saying I agree with it.
Okay,
I'm
then run it, then run it down to 7 seconds.
Yeah, or
you,
9 seconds
still
or something.
Do that with a bad snap.
Yeah, I agree.
Guys, how does that happen? How does it happen
it's
that
bad
you run
coaching.
Such a? But that's just it. How can you be coaching such a great game? Mm-hmm. For 55 minutes, and then all of a sudden it seems to fall apart.
Well, see, that's part of that's why I don't put it all on coaching. You mean in terms of the it falls apart in terms of them losing
well,
the game?
Well, think about it. In the last 5 minutes, it looks like the Packers seem to fall apart.
Yes, but I don't think that has much to do with coaching. You let your players play. And plus, McCarthy's more of an offensive coach than a defensive coach. So the defensive coordinator is the one calling the
scenes. The head coach does everything! The head coach!
I didn't
coach
say that, Mike. Mike, stop it. I didn't say that.
We're going off topic.
Mike, yeah, exactly. And I didn't say that either. That's not close to what I said.
Although it was. All right. That was exactly what you said.
No, it wasn't.
yeah, it was.
No,
anyway,
it wasn't.
Moving on.
All right, guys. Now, I want to take an early look at the Super Bowl. We'll take a more in-depth look next week. Just a quick early. What are your early thoughts on this Seattle-New England matchup?
I don't know. I think it'll be a good game, but I think that the Patriots will beat Seattle. They've shown that they're a vulnerable team, and I think that if there's anyone who can outmaneuver Seattle, it's Bill Belichick and the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Whether that's by deflating the balls or coming up with a great game plan, I'm sure he'll come up with something. I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I think this is going to be a great. It's funny how you have Carroll, who was run out of town on a rail in New England and in New York, as a matter of fact, now back to face this team.
He was not ready to
be an NFL head coach at that time.
Coming to Seattle, he had a track record of being good in college, bad in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I mean. I'm excited for this matchup only because we all sat through last year's Super Bowl, which was such a dud. There's no worse feeling than sitting there at halftime of a Super Bowl and thinking about, oh, geez, this game's already over, especially when you've had such a long run of competitive Super Bowls like we had had. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a great game. Although I think that Seattle really got exposed a little bit by the way Green Bay played. Now, obviously, they gave it away in the last 5 minutes, but do you really think that a Bill Belichick coach team will let that kind of thing happen? I don't think so, Mike. I think this is going to be a great game. I'm excited for it.
I'm not ready yet because we will have a show before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear, by the time we air our next show, we'll have had a week of practice before the game. I want to know how much Richard Sherman is practicing. Also, I'm interested in probably the most covered media day in the history of the Super Bowl. I think that the media are going to go wild all over the Patriots after what this whole Deflategate thing.
Of course.
Even though we all three agree it's a non-issue.
Yes, but we're
but
not the
it's going to bring them to media day. It's going to be, especially every network is going to cover it, all the news networks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, all the sports networks will cover Media Day. That's going to be a lot of fun to see who gives out a really
right.
good quote.
Real quick, positive or negative, the whole Deflategate thing, positive or negative effect on the Patriots in the Super Bowl, Joe?
Neutral. No
Mike,
effect.
Neutral, that's Bill Belichick,
right.
coach team.
I think it has a positive effect on them. I think we're all excited for this game. And by the way, you guys are both cordially invited to my Super Bowl party at my house, so feel free.
Yeah, thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Now, the story Mike brought to my attention, Joe, before we came on the air that I want to get to here.
Okay.
This story came out on ESPN.com about Johnny Manziel's rookie season. And,
yes.
Mike, you have the details on this more than I would do, so you have the floor on this.
They had interviewed a couple of anonymous Browns, and it had been going on all year. But this one anonymous Brown in particular said that he was a 100% joke, that he came up to rookie camp and was totally unprepared, or even in games he would not know the play that was sent in, even late in the season, and that every red flag went up. All the red flags people had of him, he fulfilled those red flags.
Can I just say that I am on record a great many time on this very show, of being a staunch Brian Hoyer supporter over Johnny Manziel. That being said, none of this is a huge surprise to me. We knew about this being his personality when he was at Texas A&M. We knew about all of the issues that came along with him in terms of his focus, his attitude, his maturity level.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I'm gathering from Mike, I saw the headlines of this one, didn't really get into the story too much this afternoon, but from what I've seen just in terms of some of the headlines and some, you know, quick takes on it,
yeah.
And from what Mike has said here, who clearly has gotten into the story a little bit more, it sounds a lot like kind of the worst case scenario for the Browns has come true with Manziel, at least here in year one. Of course, there's time for him to turn it around, for him to have that wake-up call and that change of mentality, but it's not a very good sign going into year one. You're in the NFL, and you're not taking it seriously. But I think possibly...
But isn't Hoyer a free agent?
Yes, he is.
And somebody's going to show interest in him.
Well, I'm going to...
Someone, yeah.
I'm going to make a theory here on why this is the case with Johnny Manziel, and I'll relate it to my own life a little bit. Manziel is a guy who is insanely talented. Can we all at least agree on
Manziel's
that?
Manziel's talented?
That he's got good
he
talent.
He is insane,
of course.
Yes.
He has a ton of talent.
He's insane.
I think what the
so
case
Ryan
has
Leaf,
been
though.
Is he's been able to, throughout his high school career, throughout his college career, to be able to get by on just that talent. And not have to study the playbook and really learn the ins and outs of the game the way that you have to survive at the NFL level. And, I had the same thing. All throughout high school, I was a very good student, and I never studied once. I took the SATs without a single prep class, without anything. I went in cold and did well enough to get into a good public school here in New Jersey.
That's because you're Joe Vasile.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but then when I got to college... I realized, that's not going to fly here at the next level. And it took me a year or two to figure that out, to get my act together, and then started studying more, and the results kind of came back. And so I think that that's the same thing that Johnny Manziel is maybe going through in terms of football at the NFL level, where he's been able to skate by in his talent for so long, and now he realizes, that's not going to work here. I've really got to step it up. I've got to get my act together and just learn more about the game and develop that good work ethic that I'm going to need to succeed. And I think that it certainly is possible for him to do if somebody pulls him aside, somebody who he trusts pulls him aside and says, hey, Johnny, you need to do this or you're going to flame out of this
league.
Well,
Joe, in situations like this, and Mark, you know this too, is that when you start surrounding yourself with the bad people,
which
it sounds like Manziel is, where Manziel is told by the coach, hey, or the offensive coordinator, even the quarterback's coach, hey, I need you to learn these 30 plays by tomorrow. Go over them and learn them. And then all of a sudden, here comes his agent. Well, wait, Johnny, we got this Snickers commercial you got to do. You got to come this way. Mm-hmm. Or we got this, signing, this autograph signing you got to do. Or, hey, guess what? You're going to appear in NCIS Los Angeles for about two minutes.
Or, hey, some guy in this club wants to fight you. Could you come here for a second?
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
No, but you know what? All of those ads, those TV appearances, all that stuff, that's fine because...
Well,
everyone does that kind
Peyton
of
stuff.
Manning does
a more
lot of guys do that stuff in the NFL.
Well, no,
and they
Peyton
still...
Manning already knows his plays,
yeah,
though.
No, but they still...
And Peyton Manning knows how to prioritize.
What I'm saying is that's exactly what it is.
Right.
Is they have the work ethic that allows them to juggle those TV appearances, those ads, those autograph signings with getting their work done in the NFL.
Well, that's what
he needs to learn
My point is that if Peyton Manning can do all his TV commercials and still study and still watch film and still be Peyton Manning, well, then Manziel can do it too.
Exactly.
That's my point.
It's just a matter of him learning to get it together and do that. And the quarterbacks who are successful in this league are guys who do just that.
That's not going to happen. Here's my thing, though, in regards to his maturity.
Happen.
And that's why I brought up Ryan Leaf. That's the comparison I'm going to make about Leaf. When Ryan Leaf came into this league, he was incredibly immature, but everyone was wowed by his talent and his big arm and his stature, his size as a prototype NFL quarterback. At least that's what people thought he was going to be. and everyone was, and throughout the entire time it was the Chargers just were waiting for the light to go on, waiting for him to kind of grow up, and he never did. He was the same immature guy with a poor work ethic who just wanted to live off his talent the entire time he was in San Diego. He never started working hard. He never grew up, and the light bulb never went on, and his career just kept spiraling downward. And no matter how much it did, this guy never got it together to the point where now he's in jail.
Yeah.
Well, it never really, worst it never draft bust really ever. All, what, more than, better, worse than Jamarcus Russell?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
He never even came close to putting it all together. And I think that Manziel looks like,
I mean, but the Ryan Leaf jail things, that's a little bit of a different.
My point is that the Chargers were looking at Leaf the same way people are looking at Manziel. People are looking at Manziel as, okay, when is he going to grow up? When's he going to mature? When's he going to put it all together and be the guy that the Browns need him to be? Leaf never did that. So my point is, there's a strong possibility that Manziel might never do that. He just always might be the same guy.
It's never going to happen, guys.
But there are guys who do it. And obviously, we can speculate all we want. We have no idea whether he will or not.
Sure.
Actually, we do. Guys, I mean, you learn from history. Come on, guys, you learn from history. History repeats itself.
Yes, but Mike,
Ryan Leaf, Johnny Manziel. Now, you guys
were trying to compare. Hold on.
That's like saying Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama. History repeats itself. You have a Democrat as a president?
No,
or you
socialist.
Could go, or you
socialist
could go,
as a president.
Or you
yes,
could
go we did.
Bill Clinton, or you could say Bill Clinton, Barack Obama.
No, Clinton wasn't a socialist.
I'm making a comparison here. You know, some turn out well, some don't. You can't judge this guy by what some other individual did in the past.
But you guys were using Peyton Manning as an example that Peyton could do all the TV, but
as
then
the
he
standard.
Knew
as the
you,
standard.
But Peyton Manning never did these. There was no club in Indianapolis. And I know because I was there at the time during his rookie year where Peyton Manning got into a fight with a guy at a bar. It didn't happen.
There's an in-between between Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning, and Manziel might be there. It's too
I
early
don't think
to
so.
Judge.
Okay, I don't see. I don't think right. it's,
Mike,
it's, I don't
do
think
you
it's
have
too early.
The right not to
Wrap
think so?
I do. I don't think it's
I
too
think
early.
There's a possibility. We'll have to see history, the greatest judge, and we'll find out soon.
And also, let's put it this way. Johnny Manziel would only be a junior in college right now if he had stayed in.
Yeah.
And Peyton Manning went to the NFL after being in college for 4 years. So
he might be going the way of the boss.
Different ones.
Well, guys, now the one topic I wanted to discuss last time that we didn't really get to that much because we were busy arguing about BS was the state of the New York Knicks. And they have two guys who have become lightning rods for criticism in this city. Mm-hmm. One maybe that's just becoming one. The other has been one for a little while. One's Carmelo Anthony, and the other's Phil Jackson. And Jackson's in his first year as GM with this team. Anthony is in the midst of a run with the Knicks that, judging by his contract, is going to go on for a while. I want to start with Anthony on this is, obviously this Knicks team has been terrible this year. It's been a complete disaster. And you can't put all that on Carmelo Anthony because the talent surrounding him is awful. But part of this has to go on him, a large part of it, because he's the best player. Do you still look at him as a player that you can win a championship with, Joe? As a player who can be the best player on a championship team, I should say.
He's on the wrong side of 30. He's not going to be the best player on a championship team anymore. That's not going to happen. I think in his prime, he was good enough to be the best player on a championship team. But, I mean, you can look at almost any player on the other side of 30 and say that same thing about him. I mean, maybe Kobe Bryant when he was 32.
Kobe, Jordan, LeBron, that's about it, really.
Yeah, you're talking about one or two others. You're talking about Mount Rushmore guys who are good enough to be the best
player when
they get old, you know, to still be the best player on a championship team, those special one or two in a generation players that come along. Anthony he's not that guy anymore. I think he can be the best player on a playoff team. I think that with a better surrounding cast like he had 2 years ago, he could still be the best player on a playoff contender. He can still even a top-tier playoff contender, but probably not a championship-level team without any kind of luck or just like it's like he's one and the guy who's the second best player on the team is exactly as good as he is.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of unfair to criticize him for a lot of what's going on with the Knicks. He's out there doing as much as he possibly can. You can't ask one player to completely and utterly put a team on his shoulders like this when that player is the kind of player that Carmelo Anthony is, which is a good scorer, he can rebound, but he's not the kind of guy who you say, all right, Carmelo, you're 30-whatever years old now, you have no supporting cast, but you've got enough talent to go win us 45 games. It's just not going
to
work.
Well, to be fair, no player can win 45 games in the team he's on right now. Mike, what do you think?
LeBron might.
You think LeBron might?
LeBron, okay. A 24-year-old LeBron.
Yeah. Maybe about like a
24-year-old LeBron,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, LeBron now, maybe.
I just wonder, did Teddy Roosevelt play small forward?
He was actually a power forward.
He could play small.
See,
he could play small forward for this team.
The Mount Rushmore team.
What do you think, Mike?
I have to tell you, Jefferson was a small forward. He wasn't a Mount Rushmore guy. Interesting. 6-25. I think the Knicks record is right now.
I think they just won their seventh game of the year.
Oh, okay. And
they're 7-37. They're not 7-36, are they?
No. It's not over 30.
Yeah, they're 7-36.
7-36.
Told you.
But he's the first team All Star. He's starting for the Eastern Conference.
What a joke.
The
All-Star game, though.
I think it's that has just proven to me that they're not watching
games. Well, in baseball, you had Manny Ramirez get suspended for half the season and almost start the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So that just shows you can't put stock in those.
Really, really that, not Kobe Bryant getting elected to an All-Star game.
And he's
going to
be out for the season now, too.
He's also been very bad this year.
Yes.
What was it? Allen Iverson was a All-Star starter, and he wasn't in the league anymore.
Those write-in votes, guys.
Like, the NBA All-Star voting is such a joke sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, all the All-Stars are.
So you can't really look at, he's a starting All-Star.
Plus,
Kyle Lowry's going to be the starting point guard for the East. He's had a really good season, but is Kyle Lowry the best point guard in the Eastern Conference?
I don't think him starting in the All-Star game is that big of a stretch, personally.
I don't think it's a big stretch, but I think there's better point guards in the Eastern Conference.
But Carmelo, how could he start the
John
All-Star
Wall.
Game?
Okay, yeah,
John
you're
Wall's
right.
Better
you're right.
No, John
Wall's
Wall is
better.
Starting the game.
Kyle Lowry.
Are you sure?
Look it up. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
Yes, talk amongst ourselves. I think John Wall is starting, but I will say this. And I know that
maybe Lowry just got on the team
or was
a high voter or something like that. I know he is on the team, yeah.
One of the things that you guys, I've complimented you both on, and as you guys know very well about whole contract situations, the Knicks have still not recovered from the Allen Houston contract.
Yeah, it says Lowry will start alongside John Wall in the All-Star game. That's what ESPN says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh, there you go.
So you're both right.
So I guess he'll start at the two or something.
I just don't think the Knicks have recovered yet from the Allen Houston contract.
Of course they've recovered. In what way?
Because they haven't been able to. They weren't able to get the real players they wanted to get when they were available.
Yeah, but that's been off the books for years, Mike.
No, it's not that long. Unfortunately,
sure.
It's not been that long. It's only been about 2 years or so that they finally got out of the Allen Houston contract.
Look up when the Allen Houston contract came out.
Well, I mean, does it look like they've recovered?
2 years ago.
They're not doing. And I also put serious stock in this, guys. The Knicks will never win again while the Dolans own the Knicks.
But, Mike, you also look at, the Knicks of 2 and 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
They did win.
They were a winning team.
Yeah.
They were in
barely
the playoffs.
Barely a winning
they
team.
They won 53 games.
They almost made it to the Eastern Conference
53.
Finals.
Yeah.
Not like the 65 games that you would see from a Michael Jordan or Kobe and Shaq.
You're comparing it to that?
I'm not going to go to 53 wins and say, wowie, wow, that's a great season.
Mike, a 50-win season is a very good season in the NBA.
You have to understand, as a Knicks fan, as a longtime Knicks fan, we were averaging 53-54 wins
Willis
a season.
Reed
sometimes
isn't in
I'm
the
not
NBA
talking
anymore.
Willis, I'm talking the Patrick Ewing years.
Okay.
This is different. Pat Riley ain't your coach,
though. It's a different NBA now than it used to be in the 90s.
I just don't think... I've not seen anything from the Knicks. As a matter of fact, I believe I am like a lot of NBA fans. We just don't watch the games anymore.
Allen Houston's contract expired after the 2005-2006 season.
Yeah,
so it's been off the books
for 10 years. It's been off the books, but I don't think they've recovered since.
Now, how much of the blame do you... Now, this is obviously Phil Jackson's first year with the team, so he hasn't had a chance to do as much as you would expect the GM to do in order to be able to really put a ton of blame on him. But how much of how much crap do you give him for the fact this team has been so bad, even though it's his first season? Does he get a lot of flack for this show? Because I think he has to.
I don't think he has to.
Okay.
Mark, I think that for the most part, right now he's dealing with the cards that he was given when he came in and took the position. He's made some moves, and there's going to be a lot more. I think when you're 3 years into the Phil Jackson experiment, then you can say defiantly and definitely whether it has been a success or not. As of right now, I think it's still a little bit too early on in Phil Jackson running this team to make a definite statement as to whether he needs any kind of flack for the job that he's been doing. I think that where Jackson has gotten, or rather where a lot of the flack that he's been getting kind of stems from, was the way he came in and how he came in with all these proclamations of, look, I won all these championships because of the system of the triangle offense, the system, not the players. Well, it wasn't Jordan and Pippen and that terrific surrounding cast that you had in Chicago. It wasn't the Shaq and Kobe, and then the later on the Kobe and Pau Gasol that won you the championships in Los Angeles. It was the system. It was the triangle, because I'm watching the Knicks run the triangle right now, and they've got bad players, and they're bad. So maybe it is the players that are winning Phil Jackson 11 championships and not the triangle offense. And I hesitate to call it arrogance on Phil Jackson's part in coming in, thinking that I can come in, install the triangle, and magically build a playoff team with the roster we have. But I think that's where a lot of the criticism kind of stems from, was that attitude he had with the media when he first came in.
Well, plus the fact you consider Phil Jackson was coaching those teams. He's not coaching this team. I think that has to play a little bit of a factor into this. Now, Mike,
but he's got Derek Fisher coaching, who's pretty much
his puppet. You think he's a puppet? Okay.
I don't know if I'd call him a puppet, but I'd call him a disciple. I'd call him a Phil Jackson disciple.
Okay.
And a novice.
What do you think, Mike? You think how much blame does Jackson
get in
your
36.
Mind?
They're 7-36.
They're worse than the
Sixers.
He
is the president of basketball operations.
Well, they did just beat the Sixers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But they got a worse record than the Sixers. And the Sixers are trying to lose.
I know.
They're 7-36. Yeah. And
worse
obviously,
the
they're
NBA.
Not putting people into the stands, because I'm constantly seeing commercial television ads for Knicks tickets. All right? It's not the same party it used to be at MSG. And it hasn't been for years, even during the 53-win season. Okay.
It was a madhouse during Linsanity.
The Garden is what the Jeremy Lin what with the one or two games
with the 25
half a season,
games,
right?
30
Wasn't
games
that, like half a season?
That he was terrific.
All right,
for
you could take Linsanity. I'll go back to Patrick scoring baskets,
John
and drawing
Starks.
A foul.
Larry Johnson with the 4-point
No,
play.
I'm
We've
talking before that.
That.
Yeah. No, long before that. I'm talking about even before you were in diapers.
Ron Harper. Talking about Ron,
so
Ron Harper.
When the Garden
days,
really rocked.
Greg Anthony.
Okay.
Mark Jackson.
No, I'm just talking about Charles Oakley.
I know. I'm
Charles Oakley
okay.
stopping someone in their tracks as they're trying to drive to the hoop.
Oh, great, great okay. Charles Oakley saying, if it ain't broke, don't break it.
Yeah, 7-36. He's accepting the blame, and I put it all on him.
Well, plus, if you look at the biggest move he's made since he's got here, the Tyson Chandler trade to the Mavericks, which has been a complete disaster.
Yep.
Chandler's having a fantastic season.
Yeah, but Chandler was awful and injured the last 2 years. Well, not awful, but not as good. He was looking old and over the hill for the
you
last 2 years.
You just said the same thing last week about Owen Daniels.
Yeah,
well, he is
I did.
Old.
And guess what?
What?
Chandler's having a great season the way Daniels did for the Ravens.
Daniels had
yeah,
a good season.
Yeah, these things happen sometimes.
Again, we're getting off topic. Well, Mike, you said Owen Daniels was the difference between the Texans making the playoffs or not. I can't think of...
I do. I mean, they were 9-7, I think he could have
let's
made the difference.
It
is.
Okay.
It is
ridiculous. Again.
All right, yeah.
Because I was right, and you guys know it.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Now, guys, from one team in the Tri-State area that's struggling to another in a different sport, the New Jersey Devils have become, I think, the first team of professional sports to have essentially three head coaches. This team has become almost unwatchable, especially when you compare it to the other two teams in the Tri-State area, the Islanders and the Rangers, who are red hot, and it was really fun to watch those Islander teams play, especially.
Let's not talk about recently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Devils are 2-1 on this West Coast trip that they were on. And they beat two very good teams. They beat the Kings and they beat the Sharks.
All right, well, my point was, what do you think about this three-headed coaching monster that they've assembled?
It's clunky, but I like it on a certain level that I like Adam Oates and I like Scott Stevens as coaches.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
I like having them both on the bench. I think they're both good hockey minds and they do a good job as assistant coaches. I think I'd trust Stevens more as a head coach because Oates has proven with his stint in Washington to not really be a guy who's an excellent head coach, but he is a guy who is a good assistant coach, as proven by his last tenure with the Devils when they had this great penalty kill that he was the one in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
That all being said, I like that Adam Larson is seeing ice time, and he is proving to be one of the best young defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah, Mike.
In the time that he's been getting consistent ice time, you can look up the points that he's scored. He's scoring points at a similar rate in terms of points per game.
And his turnovers?
To guys like Shea Weber.
And yeah. His turnovers?
Mike's looking at you like you told him you just cooked a turkey lasagna.
Nobody has is used more defensively, and it's great. You can look up the numbers on Larson. I don't have them right here in front of me, but he's been absolutely terrific this season, especially now that he's been getting some consistent
when
playing
time. When he
actually
gets on the ice.
Yeah, when Pete DeBoer doesn't keep him as a healthy scratch, yeah, he's been terrific.
Or bury him
in the AHL to get him playing time, because Lou Lamoriello sees that he's... No, because Lou Lamoriello sees he's not going to see the ice in the NHL because his head coach won't let him play, so he sends him down to the AHL so they can play and actually work on things and improve.
Well, also, especially when you get to the fact that I don't think this Devils team is going anywhere, what do you have to lose in playing Larson? I mean, give him a shot to learn and make...
Because, number one, it's not Larson that's the problem. The problem is you've got Jelena and you've got Mateau and you've got them in the AHL. Bring their butts up. Let Boucher and Mateau have the playing time now. We need young scorers. We don't need people scoring who are in their 40s.
Mateau's
guys
not
who
much
are my
of a scorer.
Age. Yes. Oh, I think he could be.
Mateau's more of a grinder type guy.
But he'll still set people up.
I would call him, as far as a guy that's on the Devils now, his future is probably Dinas Zubras.
Well, then bring him up and let him dig the puck out of the corner. Do something. We need goals. That's the bottom line. We need scoring, and we don't need to wait for guys my age in their 40s to score goals.
Well, I think that what the big problem is with the Devils, and this is an overarching problem that there's really only one way to solve. And the way you solve the problem, I'll tell you how you solve the problem before I get into what the problem I think is you fire Lou Lamoriello. And you end the Lou Lamoriello era. What their problem is they are still to this day, stuck in the 90s and early 2000s. They are still stuck in the pre-lockout NHL. When you could play a neutral zone trap and beat the crap out of the other team. They still try and do that, and that's not the way the game is played today, and they're falling behind because it's a much more open game than it used to be when the Devils had their great cup runs, but they still want to try and play that same way, but it's just not working because, yeah, you could win a 1-0 shootout when you had Martin Brodeur in his prime, you had that defense, and you had the NHL the way it was. You can't do that nowadays. And granted, goalies are really good nowadays, too. They're much better than they used to be. Nobody's putting up 100-point seasons, 115-point seasons anymore.
Yeah, but as you say that, though, since the Devils last won the Cup in 2003, how many teams in the Eastern Conference have gone to the Stanley Cup Finals?
I don't know.
Well, one of them is the Devils in 2012.
Yeah, but Mike, look at where the team's gone.
So they must have adapted somehow.
Look at where the team has gone since
then,
though,
Mike. But they at least got there, though.
The Jets were the AFC title game in 2010.
But I mean, chopping the head off Lamoriello. Getting to the NHL Finals 9 years after their last cup, Lamoriello doesn't look like he's the problem.
See, my thing is,
they got
with
to the
this
Stanley
team
Cup
is,
finals.
Is, Mike, my thing with this team is, well, you look at the way they've played the last three seasons, scoring three goals in the game has been a chore for the Devils.
No, it's been bad.
Tired, and I'm really getting tired of watching Jacob Josephson and Ryan Klo and Steve
Josephson.
Bernier and Steven Gionta and Michael Ryder.
Okay.
Really?
Love
I'm not a Josephson
I love
fan.
Him. Yeah, he's the only guy who's got any kind of speed on this team.
Really? And he looked good
and
in the San Jose game. If you watch the San Jose game,
he looked very good. I absolutely love Scott Gomez being back on this team and doing what he's doing.
See, I still can't forgive him for the Rangers thing.
But the problem is with Lamoriello and why I think that he is the problem, I've seen that. He's also getting sued for about $2.4 million for wrongful termination.
The way this team has been the last few years, I think you need to make a major change. I think that might be it. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, also, Lamoriello, to build off of what I had just started to mention, is about to become a huge liability for this team because he's getting the pants sued off of him and only him. because the by the guy who used to be the before Hugh Weber took over the Devils, I forget what his position was,
right?
Devils Arena Entertainment head or something like that for the team. Lamoriello absolutely hated him. Got him and seven other people fired, and this was a detail that I read that came out in the lawsuit. Apparently, the day that they were all cleaning out their offices, Lamoriello set up a chair.
You're kidding.
At the exit of the elevator and sat there and laughed as everybody walked out of the building.
Wow.
It is maniacal
stuff.
That
actually makes me want him fired.
Maniacal stuff that apparently in the board meeting where they announced that these guys were going to be let go, Lamoriello sat there kind of laughing.
That's incredibly
true.
That's incredibly douchey.
He had been talking and trying to get this guy fired for years, and so this is a not a good thing for Lou Lamoriello, not a good thing for the Devils.
All right, guys.
I think it's time to cut bait.
From one losing hockey team to another winning hockey team, I've had the opportunity to watch the New York Islanders play the last few weeks, and I am absolutely loving watching this hockey team. This is such a great team. So many young, great players, and their coach, who 99 out of 100 people wouldn't even know the name of, has done
Jack
a great
Capuano.
Job. Thank you, Joe. Yeah. Has done a great job. Well, you're the one out of 100.
Yep.
Mike and I are the one in the 99. I've done a great job with this team. Like, this is such a fun team to watch.
There's nothing like, and again, being a Devils fan, it's been difficult to watch this. There's nothing like watching a superstar develop. Mm-hmm. And over the last 3 or 4 years, with the MSG networks that we have, we get all the Islander games.
Yeah.
Watching John Tavares become one of the elite players in the NHL, and they built a team around him, and boy, is that team on the island side. As they're getting ready to move into the Barclays Center,
yeah,
boy, they look really good right now.
Great way to end their run in Nassau Coliseum.
In Uniondale. Mm,
really, and you say that it's a shame to watch on a team that's a rival, like
yes.
the Islanders. At least it's not on the Rangers.
No,
that's all
true,
I'm gonna say.
But watching him develop has been fantastic, because he is a dangerous player. He reminds me a lot of another Islander I remember being very dangerous every time he was on the ice, and that was Pat LaFontaine.
This is
before, during the Cup run, they were all dangerous.
I thought you were going to say Dennis Potvin.
No, they were all dangerous in the early 80s. But I remember LaFontaine, every time he was on the ice, you had to know where he was, you had to watch where he was. I feel Tavares is even worse. That he is such a good player.
I think the biggest thing for this Islanders team, the biggest thing that happened, I guess you could say, during the offseason was those moves that Garth Snow made just a few days before the season, bringing in Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk.
Mm.
That has made all of the difference. Having
Absolutely.
Those guys come in, solidify that defense, and not only that, but provide offense from the blue line as well. Letty's got 21 points. Boychuk's got 22 points so far this season. So not only have these guys been solid contributors defensively, but they're offensive defensemen as well. And that has only helped out the Brock Nelsons, the John Tavareses of the team to become better players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fun team to watch. It'll
fun
be great
team.
To watch them in the playoffs, guys.
Oh, now, I tell you what, once the Devils are out, I'm going with the Islanders.
We'll see. Well, right now, what we're going with is our man Mike Eccles, whose final segment always keeps us entertained. Right, Mike?
All right, guys. Our final segment of the day. For next year's NFL season, who's one player or one team who you look forward to seeing develop into a good team or a good player? Like, we watched them, maybe they didn't make the playoffs, maybe they were under 500, but you saw something in that player or that team. The guy who I'm looking forward to and the team I'm looking forward to next year.
Wait, don't tell me. It's Odell Beckham.
No. Okay. You can't use your own team.
because
you're
killing me.
I'm looking forward to Odell Beckham. Yeah. I really am looking forward to seeing Teddy Bridgewater lead the Minnesota Vikings next year. Mm-hmm. I liked what I saw. Well, I loved him in college anyway, because I think Louisville's got a very underrated football program.
Okay.
But I think towards the end of the year, the Vikings were an exciting team. They were not a pushover team, even though they might have lost games.
Bridgewater had the best season of all the rookie QBs.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Vikings maybe grab a wild card next year with Teddy Bridgewater, a quarterback. So, guys, which is...
See, I think they might grab a wild card. The only problem is they're in the same division with Jay Cutler and the Bears. I don't know how they're going to leapfrog them. Yeah. I always love bringing up Jay Cutler because nothing makes Mike laugh harder than talking about Jay Cutler.
Jay Cutler.
The draft, this past draft class was so full of great wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Like, it really, whether you go with Mike Evans or Sammy Watkins, Kelvin Benjamin, Odell Beckham, one guy who I really thought had a great season, kind of lesser known, was Jarvis Landry, the receiver for the Miami Dolphins, was the second round pick, who I think had 80 plus catches this year.
Yep.
You put him on that team that is just, and now the only problem is they still have Joe Philbin. I'm not sure if that's a good thing for this Dolphin team. They didn't get rid of the coach who doesn't seem like he can take the team to the next level. But they'll have another shot to get back to the playoffs next year. Landry's going to be a year better with more experience, another target for Tannehill to throw to along with Mike Wallace. I think the Dolphins could be a team that could challenge the Patriots for a division title next year, depending on how many guys the Patriots lose, with McCourty being a free agent, with Darrelle Revis possibly being a free agent. So with some pieces of this team that might not be back next year, I think the Dolphins could be a team that could compete if they could get a little bit better, and who knows what happens in free agency in the draft. I think Landry has a breakout year. I'm excited about him. And even as a Cowboys fan, I can't use my own team, but I can use your team. I actually will be excited to watch Odell Beckham and also Devin Kennard, the linebacker from USC, play next year. It looks like they're going to be really good players for the Giants.
The team that I'm looking forward to most seeing develop next year is the St. Louis Rams. I think that now that you're starting to see the San Francisco 49ers come down a little bit in that division, my stance on what I think of the Arizona Cardinals out in that division is well documented. I think they're going to come down a lot next year.
Documented ad nauseum, Joe.
I think they're going to come down a lot next year. And
four
I think
wins?
That,
five wins?
I'm not going to put a number on it right now. But I think that the St. Louis Rams, with what they showed this year, with their excellent defense, with the beginnings of a promising offense, if they can get a quarterback, and that's a big if.
Yeah, it is.
But if they can get a quarterback.
Brian Hoyer of the Rams, what do you think?
On that team, I think that they can at least contend for the playoffs next year. And if they get that franchise-type quarterback, which obviously
well, wait, have they given up
really
on Sam Bradford yet?
I think it's...
You've given up on Sam Bradford.
I don't think Sam Bradford's any great... I don't think Sam Bradford's any great shakes.
You can't count on Sam Bradford staying healthy for a season.
No, but do you think they've given up on him?
I think they have to.
No.
I don't know if they've given up on
Sam
Bradford.
You just want to be able to say they haven't.
Ways.
That's all you want.
Well,
you're looking for a franchise quarterback. They may still think they have one.
But the fact of the matter is even if they do have one, he can't stay on the field for 16
and
games.
He's,
so what good does a franchise quarterback for two games a season do for you?
And he was the number one overall pick.
He's never delivered
on that promise.
You have to get somebody in there, at least, even if it's just as your backup, who's a capable starter.
Yeah.
Because even if they haven't given up on Bradford, with his injury history, he's never played a full season, so you have to have somebody in there who you could be comfortable with handing it over to for eight games. And if you're going to do that, you might as well just get a new starter.
Well, the big thing for them next year is Greg Robinson, the offensive lineman they picked in the number one overall, had a horrible season. So he's going to need to bounce back, because when you invest a high pick in a guy on the offensive line, you look at as a guy who's going to be a... a stalwart on your offensive line, an anchor on your offensive line. It hurts when he doesn't pan out and he didn't have a great rookie year. But
I am
we'll
looking
see.
Forward to seeing them improve and finally live up to some of the promise that they showed this year.
Well, hey, they beat Seattle and they went to St. Louis and they went to Seattle and put up a good fight for a while until their quarterback position ended up killing them. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be an exciting year. I'm already excited for the 2015 NFL season, guys.
I don't know why we had to wait until my segment for the Joe Vasile meltdown.
Mike, it was only a meltdown because you asked me the same question three times and I answered you all three times.
No, I think it was a meltdown.
And my answer wasn't changing and I was getting frustrated.
Because this is the most well-dressed you've ever been at one of our shows.
Yeah, I just came from an interview before. So.
All right, guys, that's it. That does it for this week on the Mark, Mike, and Joe Show. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out on iTunes. Like, comment, and subscribe. Check us out on YouTube. You can like, comment, and subscribe on there. Also on Podomatic. Share us. Tell a friend. Share us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on whatever social media sites
you use. And also, leave us a nice review on iTunes as well. We saw somebody threw one of those up just this past week, and we want to say thank you for
thank you for that. We appreciate that. I think it's the first review we've had.
Yeah, it was
and
very
we're
nice.
Glad it's we're glad it's a good one. That's for sure. Yeah. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week for some Super Bowl talk. But until then, have a good week. See you next time.